Hey, CNFers, batting leadoff today is Goucher College's MFA in nonfiction. The Goucher MFA is a two-year low-residency program. Online classes let you learn from anywhere, while on-campus residencies allow you to hone your craft with accomplished mentors who have Pulitzer Prizes and best-selling books to their names. The program boasts a nationwide network of students, faculty, and alumni, which has published 140 books and counting. You'll get opportunities to meet literary agents and learn the ins and outs of the publishing journey. Visit goucher.edu/nonfiction to start your journey now. Take your writing to the next level and go from hopeful to published in Goucher College's MFA program for nonfiction. Yes. Riff. Oh, that's nice. That's real nice. That's warm. It's warm and fuzzy. That's two IPA buzzy. If you've had an Oregon IPA, it only takes two. Hey, it's Brendan O'Mara, and this is the Creative Nonfiction Podcast, the show where I talk to badass writers, filmmakers, and producers about the art and craft of telling true stories. Today's guest is Vlad Yudin, a Russian-born documentary filmmaker best known for the trilogy of Generation Iron bodybuilding films, which I believe at least two of them are on Netflix. His Vladar company makes and produces lots of films in the fitness business, and we unpack a lot of what makes him a particularly free spirit when it comes to his filmmaking. A little warning here, all right? This might be a little off-putting to some of you, and to some extent it is to me as well, but I'm giving you a heads up because I love you. And I'm giving you this heads up because this is what I plan to do going forward. You ready? Okay. I'm going to start courting mid-roll ad reads. Not too long, not too obtrusive, I hope, but when you hear the start of this new riff, courtesy of Wheatman on Audio Jungle, you'll know you're in for a little plug of some kind. Cue it up. Today is a house ad for my monthly newsletter. So I'm not going to say anything here. I will let the ad do the talking. It's only like 35 seconds long. I need to subsidize the show in new and creative ways, especially since I got shit canned from the day job last week. So as I'm going forward, I'm really working on setting up a Patreon thing. So the more listener supported the show is, the more ads I can take off the actual recording of the show. In which case, it'll be more seamless, and we'll get to the meat of the things that you've come to really enjoy about the show. But until then, like I said, it's something I gotta do. NASCAR cars go around the track, and there's not a single spot on those cars that's not taken up by some sort of an ad. So, helps pay for the whole enterprise. So, okay, now that that's out of the way, be sure to subscribe to the show, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play Music, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and hand it off like a triangular folded up note that you did back in high school. You know, hand to hand. Shout out to Sybil Baker of episode 35 fame, a great writer, great author, who made a similar recommendation of the show to someone who didn't know about it. It was on Twitter, and she tagged the show at CNFPod, at Brendan O'Mara. That's what you should do. So I knew to engage. And that was really nice. That's what we need, hand to hand. Rage against the algorithm, man. You're the social network. Okay, and now, batting second. Discover your story. Bay Path University, founded in New England. The New England. In 1897, is the first and only university to offer a no-residency, fully accredited MFA, focusing exclusively on creative nonfiction. Attend full or part-time from anywhere in the world. In the BayPath MFA, you'll find small online classes and a dynamic and supportive community. You'll master the techniques of good writing from acclaimed authors and editors, learn about publishing and teaching through professional internships, and complete a master's thesis that will form the foundation for your memoir or collection of personal essays. Special elective courses include contemporary women's stories, travel and food writing, family histories, spiritual writing, and an optional week-long summer residency in Ireland with guest writers including Andre DeBuse III, Anne Hood, and Mia Gallagher, among others. Could be Maya, I'm not sure. Start dates in late August, January, and May. Find out more at baypath.edu/MFA. I don't know why, but I'm really out of breath after that one. Ugh. Get it together, Brendan. You can do this. Okay, so Vlad is here to talk about his journey as a filmmaker. It's pretty great. And how he carved out a niche, or never know what that word, in a crowded industry. His independent spirit is paramount to him as a filmmaker, and also how he tries to keep things as objective as possible. So let's clear the deck for Vlad Uden. What brought you to the States from Russia, and how'd you get into documentary film?
Well, I moved from Russia to the States in the 90s, basically. It was like 95, 96. Mm-hmm. And that's the time when basically Russia was, you know, terrible conditions, you know, for living and especially schooling. You know, so I had to, you know, my family made a decision for me to move over here for pursuit of a better life. And most importantly, you know, get into better schools and, you know, for career choices, basically. The 90s were just, you know, a terrible time in Russia at the time. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of things were collapsing, infrastructure and, you know, especially schooling. It just wasn't as good as it used to be before that, you know. So it was really a decision to for my career and life in general, I would say. And, you know, I always had interest in film. Storytelling. And so I, you know, I went to school here and I eventually pursued my career in film and documentary film.
And how old were you when you came over here?
I was about 13 years old when I moved to the States. Yeah.
And what state did you move to?
New York.
Okay.
New York. I lived in New York, New Jersey and, New York basically, you know, my whole lot, you know, since I moved here. And now, you know, I basically travel around the world, all over the States. And, you know, we're still based in New York as a company and myself. But, you know, we spend a lot of time in different cities. And, of course, California is one of the main places we spend a lot of time in now, you know, now that we're in the film business and bodybuilding, of course, as well.
Yeah. And so what were some of the, you know, you said you were into storytelling and then, of course, you know, filmmaking. So what was that? How did you get the bug? You know, what were some of those films maybe that made you want to pick up the camera and be a director yourself?
It's always been American cinema that inspired me. You know, when I was growing up, I enjoyed films in different genres. And I watched a lot of Russian films, a lot of films from Europe, you know, France, Italian cinema. But I think American cinema definitely inspired me a lot. You know what I mean? Like the scale of it, the whole kind of the style of making films, you know, from action films to comedies to everything else, American definitely inspired me. The American culture always like really intrigued me, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that specifically American films inspired me to be in filmmaking, to be perfectly honest.
Was there a particular documentary you can point to that made you say like, oh, that specifically is kind of what I want to do when I grow up?
You know, it's funny. I never, like when I was younger, I never really like watched documentaries too much. It wasn't something that I was very interested in like that. And documentaries, I was primarily watching feature films. Documentaries, I think it's something that I enjoyed like later on in life. And sort of like I developed appreciation for documentaries as I was watching them, you know, a lot of different sports documentaries and you know, in general, like documentary is a tricky thing, you know, mm-hmm. because it's like, there's so many different things that can be called documentaries. You know what I mean? Like there's sports documentaries, then there's like, you know, reality document. It can be documentary also, you know, derives from documentary world basically. And then there's styles of documentaries, the way they're made. But, you know, I definitely developed appreciation for it later. I can't really tell when I was young. Like I saw a documentary and I wanted to be a documentary filmmaker, you know what I'm saying?
Right, right. And when you were getting started, what were some maybe early growing pains you experienced as you were starting your career and starting your craft as a filmmaker?
You know, I have a very independent spirit, you know, and I still do to this day. And I'm just very blessed that, you know, me and my company, my partners were able to remain independent and have that type of mentality. And in the beginning, it was like when you're first starting out, you want to be noticed, or you want to be sort of like get a big break. You know what I mean? Like in any industry, wherever you're trying to get in.
Right.
And it's always very difficult, you know what I mean? In the film industry, I think it's very more difficult because it's not a clear path to success, I think, you know? But, you know, with the independent, you know, kind of like mentality, mindset, it was always, you know, let's do it ourselves. Let's get these cameras, you know, let's try to come up with topics and let's try to make projects basically on our own. That developed, I think, a very strong mindset and like thick skin, basically, you know, to the point where today it actually helps us to make films that we want to make and to make them successful. And the growing pains is always how do you get the film, how you get it out there, you know, who's going to watch it, like how you get people to watch it, you know. But it's always the biggest challenge in the beginning. But, you know, with our mindset, it made us stronger. And I think that really caused success later down the line, you know, that type of mindset and going through these type of challenges made us, you know, better in business of filmmaking, basically.
Mm. Where does that independent spirit come from that you spoke about, that you've been able to carry over to your film company and to make the films you like based on just your own taste?
I don't know, man. I don't know. I think it was in my DNA probably, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And same as, you know, Ed's my partner, we just didn't want to work for anybody really, you know, and just kind of wanted to have that freedom, you know. That doesn't mean we don't work hard. I feel like I work harder than anybody else in this industry. But, you know, we just didn't want to have, I don't know, in my opinion, like this, like, you know, if I fail, I want to fail because of me. And I don't want to be like somebody else, fail because somebody else tells me to do something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
At the same time, if I want to succeed, I want to succeed because of us, you know, because of my team, basically. I don't know. I think really just part of the DNA. I don't know how to explain it, man. Like it's difficult to give it like elaborate explanation of what caused it. I think it's just always been that mindset, you know. But that doesn't mean I don't like working on the team or have partners, because we have a lot of partners, we have a lot of team members, and I love working in tandem with people. It's just the independence, I feel like, is so important, you know what I mean? Especially in today's world where, you know, the filmmaking and digital and everything else allows you to do it. Now it's all about just competing and just trying to find a way to get the audience to watch your films.
What would you say was your first, just, you know, quotations around major, but like your first major success that showed you that you were on the right path and gaining momentum doing this thing you love doing?
You know, it's definitely steps, like kind of like stepping stones, you know what I mean, that we took. We started off making music documentaries, you know. They made a first feature film called Last Day of Summer that was in I think 2010. That was, you know, the first film we actually worked with, you know, Hollywood talent, I would say, you know. It was DJ Qualls and Nicky Reed from Twilight at the time. So we made a William Sadler, you know, those are the, you know, people that, you know, I've been seeing a major film. So my first feature film called Last Day of Summer. And all those, and, you know, before that, worked with Sony on music documentaries. We made a documentary on Big Pun, which is a major music star here in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And we always had, you know, kind of like distribution partners, basically. But the first time I really felt good about what we're doing, like, you know, and to me, it felt really great is when we made the first Generation Iron film. In 2013, we released it fully independent, and that became one of the top grossing documentaries and one of the top indie films of 2013. And we did it fully independently, you know. And that to me was a great accomplishment because they gave us courage to continue building a company, a vertically integrated company, meaning that we control the production, distribution, marketing, and, you know, everything from the ground up, you know, where prior to that, we're dependent on different other partners, distributors. And in many cases, sometimes you're not happy with that because if something goes wrong, you know, you're sort of like in a limbo. So with the Generation Iron first film, 2013, it was a time where we felt really, really good about what we can do. Of course, it wasn't, you know, all great after that. It was still a challenge. It was still a lot of challenges, and you went to like build a company more. But it was definitely a first time where we felt really good.
Well, what would you say is the nature of your particular hustle, not only on creative, but to get the funding you need and to put these things together? Because it's kind of a balance of that art and business.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the biggest challenge is always who's going to watch your films, right? Like, how are you going to get it to the people, right? How are you going to create an audience? Because, you know, everybody wants to make films. All the independent filmmakers, they want to make films really badly. And they want to tell stories they want to tell. And then they put everything they have into like a project, let's say, right? And then it's time to get it out there, right? The most common way to get it out there is take it to a film festival and take it to another film festival, right? And try to build an audience that way. That's the most common way to do it. You know what I mean? It's, you know, for us, myself and my partner, Edwin Mejia, you know, we really wanted to build a company that, you know, makes films, releases films, and other programs, of course, other media programs. And so it was important for us to have a steady audience, a steady base that we had to grow. So after, you know, Generation 9 was released, we wanted to build Generation 9 Network and really build an audience to where when we, you know, drop a new film, a new project, we have audience that's waiting for that to come out. You know what I mean?
Right.
So we invested a lot of effort, a lot of our resources into building the audience and continue building it every year after that. To where we have our own sort of like a mini studio system, you know, so where we can put the movies out and we have people waiting for it, you know, because without that, you know, you really, a lot of indie filmmakers are struggling every time you make a new film, you have to look for a distributor, you know what I mean? It's just a whole different type of business, you know, and
right.
Unfortunately in today's world, you know, when technology like allows everybody, like right now, anybody can be a filmmaker, right? Everybody can buy a camera and be a filmmaker. You can make a movie on your cell phone if you really want to, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So there's so much competition out there. There's YouTube, right? There's so much free content out there, right? So when somebody actually wants to, like, how do you convince somebody to actually buy it from you with so much free content, you know? It becomes a challenge in that, and I feel like every filmmaker needs to find their niche or some kind of a way to, for it to be seen, basically.
Yeah, it's kind of what like the brilliant author and marketer Seth Godin says when he says, like, you know, if you're going to, you know, be successful in this kind of age where there is so much content, not only that but really good content, that you have to seek out essentially the smallest viable audience and whatever that is. And it seems like you've been able to successfully carve out a great niche with the bodybuilding and fitness scene. What would you say came first? Were you into that, or did you just notice that there was this sort of subculture that lacked compelling storylines? And you're like, oh, if I just kind of, there's an audience baked in over there. If I take my talent to that audience, I can make a living. I can do the work I want to do.
Yeah, basically after the first Generation Iron film, you know, we got into the fitness industry. We saw there was a big void in the fitness industry specifically. We saw that there's a lot of, it's a great industry, you know, but it's in a media space, there was nobody there yet, right? So just to give you a quick background, you know, Joe Weider was the revolutionary media man and also, you know, a man that really created the fitness industry in this country. You know, in the 60s and 70s, he built it up. He made the magazines, he made the federations, he made the competitions. He was really the man, you know, that really created this industry here. And then when we came in the industry in 2013, you know, that's basically There was no media, really. There was just, you know, because Joe Weider sold his magazines and they weren't really, they were just basically print, you know what I mean? It was print magazines. It was some blogs here and there, but it wasn't really like a media channel, you know what I mean, for bodybuilding and fitness. So it was still a big void in that space. And, you know, we right away started building our audience from the first film. And we saw that we can revolutionize this, you know, the media space in this industry. And that's what we started working on. Now, of course, you know, when you come into any industry, you know, from outside, basically, you have to, you can't just start, you know what I mean? It's not just about throwing money at it, really. You have to kind of build, you have to be authentic and you have to build the right team around you, you know? So we focused on bringing the right people on board. And, you know, it took years to really, you know, build the network up. So we launched the Generation Iron Fitness Network, generationiron.com, basically, which is, to put it in simple words, it's basically like kind of like the Vice Channel meets bodybuilding and fitness. Mm-hmm. So it's a publishing platform. It's an original content platform. It has, you know, all the news, the latest news, latest original content that we create for free. And of course, it's also a mini studio for the releases of original films that we're creating every year now. So we, you know, it took time and it took a lot of effort, but we were able to build it every year more and more to where now it's, it became a leading platform in the space. And for us, it was the major thing that we wanted to create for this industry, because fitness industry, you know, it's kind of complex, because if you're looking at competitive bodybuilding, it's very niche and it's very, you know, and it's very, very, I would say small compared to the fitness overall, you know,
right, right.
Fitness overall, of course, because of social media, became very big right now. But it's still, you know, it's, you know, competitive fitness bodybuilding is different from just the mainstream body fitness. You know, people just want to work out. Everybody wants to work out nowadays, you know, but we cater towards everybody in the fitness. But of course, you know, the bodybuilding fans and the core audience of ours are people that really, you know, want to live the lifestyle and want to learn more about the lifestyle, you know?
Hey, hey, what is the meaning of this? Well, I want to say that this episode is also brought to you by my monthly newsletter. Oh, yeah, that's right. On the first of the month, you can get a tasty bit of goodness sent right to your inbox. My reading recommendations for the month and what you might have missed from the world of the podcast. Visit BrendanOmera.com. Once a month, no spam, can't beat it. Now back to the show. The bodybuilding industry, especially the crew that you were essentially following in the first film, and those IFBB pros, it's a pretty insular and almost secretive community, and they're, you know, they struggle to want mainstream coverage, but at the same time, if mainstream coverage comes to them, they kind of wall off. They're a bit distrustful. So,
yeah.
So how did you gain, what was your approach to gain trust to get that close to these, you know, the heavyweights of the IFBB circuit?
It's a good question. You know, it's, I think in many ways they were, they wanted the exposure in a sense, you know, they wanted to be heard. And the first Generation 9 film, believe it or not, was very well received by just people that didn't know anything about bodybuilding in general. You know, we got so many letters and phone calls and emails just from people discovering, you know, rediscovering bodybuilding. Because prior to Generation 9, the only other movie really that highlighted bodybuilding was Pumping Iron.
Right.
That was released in like 1978, I believe. And we actually co-produced Generation Iron, the first film, with the producer of Pumping Iron, Jerome Gary. But, you know, the trust, you know, it's, you know, once we started having conversations and filming, you know, they definitely, you know, it's a connection, you know what I mean? Like you always connect with the subject in a way. But at the same time, you know, it's always a challenge because you can't become best friends with the subject of the documentary, mm-hmm. because you have to make it objective. You know, I like to make my films really objective. I like for the audience to make a decision whether they, you know, what they like about the character or what they don't like about the character. You know, I just like to present an objective point of view I don't like to make Michael Moore style documentaries where it's just one sided. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And he makes great films, but it's always a one side to a story. You know what I like to do is make at least highlight, you know, enough on both sides for the people to make their decisions for themselves. You know,
right.
So I can become best friends with these guys, but at the same time I can just tell them, you know, whatever we film is we'll film it. You tell me, I ask you the questions that, you know, I think should be asked, and you answer them how you want to answer them, you know? And of course, not everybody's going to be happy with everything. You know, we've made so many films in the last 3 years, you know, different subject matters in bodybuilding, and somebody's always unhappy with the portrayal or something, but we always try to make it as objective as possible, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think you do that particularly well with the Ronnie Coleman documentary. Also, because he was, he's such a great figure, but you could also be very critical of the way he treated his body during his competitive prime, which ultimately led to how much his body has broken down over the years. So you do show that side of his peers being critical. I mean, they're reverent, but they're also critical of, you know, did this guy really need to be deadlifting 800 pounds 2 weeks before the Olympia? You're like, that's just not really smart. And
right.
So I think that's a perfect illustration of what you're getting at, of just kind of laying out two sides here, because you could have easily just, you know, put him up on the pedestal and just did a 90-minute documentary just worshiping the guy.
Yeah, you know, it's the Ronnie one is an interesting film, because I told him before we made the film, I told him, you know, if we're going to do this, you know, we have to, you have to give us access to your life currently, you know, and
mm-hmm.
show us how you live and show us the surgeries and things you go through on a daily basis and stuff like that. And he agreed to it. And, it's so funny because when we were making the film, because I know Ronnie from before, you know, so
mm-hmm.
I knew he was on crutches. I knew he went through multiple surgeries, and people in the bodybuilding industry also kind of knew about it, you know. But so when we were making the film, it was kind of like, you know, I took it every day, like, okay, you know, because I saw him like this already before, you know, it wasn't like a shocking thing to me. And then when the movie came out, and like people were shocked by it because they never saw like a concise piece like that on Ronnie.
Yeah.
And then some people for the first time saw him on crutches like that in the surgery, and then we're just like, everybody was shocked. And some people were so disturbed by it, they couldn't even finish the film, they told me. But yeah, and to me, it was like, oh, you know, I was kind of surprised because I kind of assumed that, you know, people would just take it as it is. But yeah, it was shocking to a lot of people seeing Ronnie like this, you know, currently in the present time going through what he's going through. But that was a case where it was very important to get access, you know what I mean, to him, you know what I mean? And it was very important for us to come to that agreement, for us to be able to film all that.
And in this, part of the reason why I kind of like the bodybuilding culture is the monastic drive and focus that the men and women have for their discipline. I'd even extend that to ballet and anyone who has mm-hmm. these singular focuses. I really love following those people. And would you say that that's a big reason why you're attracted to this particular sort of niche of your filmmaking, because of that singular focus?
To me, you know, it's something that I still want to discover more and more every year. The drive of the bodybuilding athletes in that industry, I would say it's probably the most unrewarding sport, you know, on a financial level. When it comes to the specifically competitive bodybuilding I'm talking about,
mm-hmm.
is the most, you know, when I say the most difficult, is I believe that because just, you know, it's a very tough sport mentally and physically. And really, you're being judged based on your look, right? I mean, you're being judged on a specific criteria, but it's based on a look of how you look, right? So you're constantly being judged on your body, basically, right? So, like, you know, it takes a toll on you through constant changes. And, you know, in bodybuilding, of course, for those who don't know, it's you go through phases, you know what I mean? Like, right before the competition, everything's changing, you know, there's off-season, on-season, and it's just a constant thing. And to me, it's always, you know, I'm learning something every year about the mentality of what they go through. And sometimes, you know, bodybuilders differ from each other, you know, some are more dedicated, some are less. Because of genetics, some can get away with more, some can get away with less. And everybody has different mentality, you know, and for me, the excitement is kind of learning, learning the differences. And every project we do, I learn something else. So it's
yeah, and something that I've always found a bit problematic with professional bodybuilding is it's not that the performance enhancers, the steroids, or HGH, and whatever diuretics they need to take to dehydrate their body and get a nice grainy look for the stage. It's what always kind of bugged me was the fact that's never really acknowledged, yet these guys are kind of the face of nutritional companies, and they kind of say, like, if you take this, you'll look like me. But they are also pumping themselves full of, you know, a laboratory's worth of chemicals. And I wonder if you, like, you personally as a storyteller, an objective storyteller in this world, if that's something that is hard for you to reconcile as you tell these guys' stories.
No, it's not difficult for me. I mean, because it you can make the same analogy to life in general. You know what I mean? Like, you have professional athletes from every sport promoting something, endorsing something, right?
Right.
And you don't know what they take in behind the closed doors. That's first of all. But secondly, we just made a film actually called Enhanced. It's number two documentary in the country right now. You can check it out on iTunes. It's called Enhanced. It's about a character named Tony. His name is Dr. Tony Huge. You should check it out if you didn't see it yet.
But yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
This is the guy that's basically the opposite of that, right? This is the guy. He's not a professional bodybuilder, but he's like he calls himself the pioneer of the human evolution. And he basically is actively promoting different steroids, different substances. He's experimenting with pretty much every substance in the world. And his goal is to he thinks the steroids and all types of different substances are meant to help people in general, not just in bodybuilding, but in general. So it's all the opposite of, you know, because normally, obviously, when you make a bodybuilding movie, right, bodybuilders, they don't necessarily want to talk about this stuff, right?
Right.
Because it can affect their endorsements. They can affect their, you know, it's just something you don't talk. It's like any other, like, you don't see a baseball documentary and they talk about steroids, right? You don't see that.
Right.
It's just something you don't necessarily mention. But with this film, it's all about that. And, you know, it's a different approach on things. He's like 100% honest, or he claims to be honest. And it looks quite shocking because of how open he is, basically. But it's like a different take on that. You know, he's in the fitness industry, and he is all about promoting steroids. And he claims that steroids should be taken by everybody for different reasons, of course. And not just steroids, but like this, you know, obviously when we say steroids, I mean, like, there's like hundreds of different compounds, you know.
Right.
And he's actively explaining and promoting it in film. And, you know, of course, we have his critics that criticize him for that. And it's an interesting dynamic. So that film kind of covers that. But me personally, your question was originally, do I feel conflicted with that? I don't, you know, because we do cover, you know, steroids in various films, different in various forms. But I know I feel conflicted because ultimately, you know, it's just life. You know what I mean? Some people will talk about it. Some people won't talk about it. And that's not just bodybuilding, but that's just every single sport and every single, you know, whatever else is there that people, you know, that people participate in, whether they want to talk about it or not.
Right. And so with, you know, Generation Iron, the first one, you know, follows kind of a cohort of bodybuilders going to the Olympia. Second one really focuses on social media and fit those fitness stars. And your third film, it's kind of that striving for excellence versus perfection and whether that's good or bad. Would you say that you're, the third one, like, that's the conclusion of a Generation Iron trilogy, or is this something you keep building on going forward?
Well, as a Generation Net Network, we make, you know, last year we made four films, you know, released four films. This year it's going to be, I think, four or five films. So under the umbrella of Generation Nine, we're gonna make many, many films. Mm-hmm. Kind of like biopic, like Ronnie Coleman. You know, we're making a movie about Dorian Yates right now, which is a legendary bodybuilder.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so there's gonna be various films under the umbrella of Generation Nine. As far as Generation Nine title as a film, as a trilogy, you know, we made a trilogy, and that's supposed to be basically it, unless something comes in that would fit the genre and we'll expand on it. But as of now, this is a trilogy that, you know, was completed, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now we're focusing on a variety of other films under the umbrella of Generation Iron.
And what would you say is your greatest driving motivation these days?
Well, right now, the biggest motivation is the fact that we're able to build a Generation 9 Fitness Network, and we're able to reach a lot of people, and we're able to give people content that they want to see that they can't see anywhere else. That's sort of like the responsibility and the focus of today's, mission that we're on. You know, it's something that we are able to deliver for the audience, and we have to make sure that we continue to do so and make sure to cater to them, you know, because ultimately they can't find it anywhere else. We know that we're the ones providing it for them. So it's a big responsibility, but it's also a big motivation for us to keep going forward and make sure that, you know, people are not only, you know what I mean, like just get everything catered to them, what necessarily they expect to see, but also give them something unexpected and open up their minds more. And this is why we make films like Enhanced, something completely different, you know, something from the Generation 9 series, let's say, and continue to, you know, to give them things to open up their minds basically more, but do it in a way where it's, you know, it's quality and they, you know, feel good about watching it basically at the end.
So these days, who would you say is your favorite bodybuilder? And that could be a historic one or a current one, but like, who is someone you look up to in the bodybuilding world and be like, oh yeah, that man or woman's got it figured out?
I don't know, man. You know, honestly, I don't look up to anybody in general in life. You know, I don't want to sound arrogant. I just, you know, I don't know. I just don't look up. You know what I mean? Like, it's just something I don't really look up to people. But the people that are really like I'm intrigued by right now, I would say, is Dorian Yates. That's why we're making a movie about him right now. Dorian Yates actually has a very interesting past. I don't know how much you know about him, but he's from UK. And he won six Mr. Olympia titles back in the 90s. And very interesting storyline, because when he was young, he was a skinhead in UK, right? He was a skinhead, actually.
Mm.
Then he became a bodybuilder. Then he became sort of like, you know, well, he always was. Like when he was a skinhead, he was always into Jamaican culture, right? So it's very interesting that he was able to kind of like combine both and have both things influence. So it was very, very strange. And then after he retired from bodybuilding, he had a very interesting kind of like life altering experience. And now he's heavily into marijuana. He's kind of like a hippie, you know, he lives in Spain, on the coast of Spain. And he's sort of like, does yoga and stuff like that. You know what I mean? He's a very interesting guy.
Yeah.
And this movie we're making about him is going to be very, very, different from everything else we've done, because he's so interesting. But what made him very special in bodybuilding, that he was kind of like the first mass monster. So before that, before him, bodybuilders were kind of like more slimmer and more just, had different type of physiques. You know, when he came in, he was like this huge brolic bodybuilder, and he kind of like in many ways changed bodybuilding to where it became more about size after him. So like Ronnie Coleman is came after him, right? And he was kind of like had to take his body even further, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So Dorian Yates was the guy that really changed bodybuilding and kind of like pushed in the direction of size. It's very interesting. And you know, that's one of the historical figures, you know. But the other guy that I'm always intrigued about, I'm always excited about working with, is Kai Greene.
Yeah.
From Brooklyn, New York. You know, this is the guy that's very different from any other bodybuilder, you know, that I know, because there's so many different layers to him. artistic, you know, he's artistic. He's obviously a great bodybuilder, accomplished, but also just like he always creates a lot of excitement from people all over the world when they meet him. He's very intellectual, very, like I said, artistic. You know, he paints, he does art, he does comic books. And just, you know, conversing with him all the time is very interesting because so many topics we always talk about, you know, and we work closely with him on different projects. So definitely always intrigues me and in some ways inspires me as well, you know.
Absolutely. And Vlad, lastly, where can people get more familiar with you and your work online and find you online if they want to get more familiar with your work?
Absolutely. I encourage everybody to go to generationiron.com to find out all our original content, films, and really just, you know, for your audience, you know, whoever's listening to you, if they just want to learn about bodybuilding culture or get the daily news about bodybuilding and fitness, or just get maybe advice about how to work out and stuff like that, you know what I mean? They can go to that website and they can see a lot of great information.
Fantastic. And when the Dorian Yates documentary comes out, we'll have to have you back on the show to talk about that and a little bit more of your process to filmmaking, too.
Let's do it, man. I look forward to it.
Fantastic. Vlad, thanks for the time, and we'll be in touch down the road, man.
Thank you so much, Brandon. Good talking to you, man.
You too. Take care. Hey, do you like that? You dig the show? You dig the new heavy metal there in the middle of the show? I mean, any chance to riff charge this beast, I'm gonna do it. Name another podcast of this kind that sends you into the mosh pit. I dare you. Anyway, thank you to our sponsors, Goucher College's MFA Nonfiction and Bay Path University's MFA in Creative Nonfiction. And also my newsletter. Hey! Thanks to Vlad. And thanks to you for listening. Be sure to subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts, the usual places. And head over to BrendanOmara.com for show notes and the newsletter. Keep the conversation going on Twitter at BrendanOmara and at CNFPod. On Instagram, at CNFPod. And on Facebook, Creative Nonfiction Podcast. Got you covered. We're all in this crazy mess together, man. So let's just keep working, keep making good stuff. And remember, if you can do, interview. See ya.